In the meantime, Elliot Friedman joins me here from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot, before we get to the Maple Leafs last night and that loss against the Rangers, where once again they squander a lead and the coach describes the team as soft afterwards, some news coming out from the provincial government of Ontario, capacity limits, 50% capacity February 2nd and then March 14th. Both the Toronto Maple Leafs and Ottawa Senators allowed once again to fill the building. The question that I have through all of it is, I wonder how much financial damage is done to the NHL, the salary cap, etc. by that point. Do you have any idea or do you have a gut feeling on it?
Well, I did some counting. Ottawa, before they're allowed 100%, they have 15 home games. I think it's 8-7 is the split. Toronto has 10. I don't remember what the split is off the top of my head. So, I mean, look, Toronto averages $3.5 million every full home game. Ottawa averages, I think it was $600,000. So you can do the math. It's a big damage. And you know, one of the things I was talking about with a couple of teams and agents the other day, Jeff, is that. You know, if you're a team that's going for it and you've got no pressure in terms of dealing with your UFAs, like just like we're not treating anybody and we'll deal with all this at the end of the season. There's all like some teams are saying there's no point in negotiating now until we know if we have that extra million or not. And it seems it's like it's a big number for it's a big number for me, not so much for you, $1 million. But, you know, I think that if for a corporation or a team, it's not a huge number, but every dollar is going to matter under that cap next year, right? For so many of these teams. So a lot of them are sitting, like, there's been no announcement yet, but all of these teams are telling you, like, there's damage for it. There's no question. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt.
To the Maple Leafs last night, and this was Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. It's Madison Square Garden. It's the New York Rangers. It's the Maple Leafs. They get out to a 3-1 lead, and everyone in Toronto says, oh no, it's a 3-1 lead early.
Yep.
And sure enough, Ryan Reeves with a pair, Adam Fox with a pair. By the way, it's Ryan Reeves' birthday today, and he's 35 years
35.
Old. 35? Still does this job. Man, how many 35-year-olds in the history of the game, Elliot? Not just recently, but still do this job. There are not many in the history of this game that are game to do it this late into their NHL career. But 35 years old, happy birthday, Ryan Reeves. 2 goals last night. A pretty sloppy
game. You know, the other thing, too, is like how many people do it in general? I bet you if you went back a generation, you'd find a few. Like Donald Brashear played 1,000 games. Craig Berube played 1,000 games. Domi played 1,000 games. Those guys must have been later. But now, I mean... You know, back then, every team had 5 guys who did that, right? Now there's, 5 guys in the league who do it?
Yeah, and I mentioned before he came on, Nick Deloria and Curtis McDermott from last night from the Colorado-Anaheim game. But there are very few that I ever met that loved everything about it. And certainly as you get older, you love less about it. There's really only one person that I know. You may know more. And that's Tony Twist of the St. Louis Blues, who just loved everything. Everything about, but it's that we said it before. It's the toughest way to earn a living. One, what did you make of the game last night, both from the Maple Leaf and Ranger perspective? And then we got to have a conversation about Sheldon Keefe. Anytime a coach refers to his team as soft, alarm bells go off.
I mean, look, I probably felt the same way that everybody else did. Toronto gets out to an early lead. Marner scores the goal. I really enjoyed the conversation I had with, Stewie in the game last night about would that bother Marner, that whole power play talk. And with that shot he scored with, I'm surprised he actually doesn't score more often. It was such a great shot in a perfect
nice
spot.
Shot.
And so, you know, it starts well for Toronto. They're up. The Rangers tie it. You're sitting here and then you get blown out of the building in the third period. Now, you know, I don't like to overreact to one game. I don't. But I think because of what, you know, I remember it might have been – I can't remember if it was Bieksa or Kessler. It was kind of whiny, so it was probably Bieksa. But when they were players in Vancouver, they talked – I remember talking to them once about Vigneault, and I said I really liked Vigneault's honesty. And they said as a player, they could understand why I liked that but they said they didn't always like that. And I said, okay, what's the issue? And they said, in a market like Vancouver, if Vigneault comes out and criticizes a player, it's licensed for everyone else to do it, right? That player gets that label, or everybody can run with it, and the player feels like, uh-oh, there's no way of defending myself to this. So I've kind of always remembered that thinking. So then last night when Keefe comes out and says the team played soft, now everybody has license to run with it. Like, what does this mean? What are they going to do about it? And, you know, everybody's – and it's a license to say the Maple Leafs are soft. And I don't even know if in that moment Keefe is even thinking that he's done that, but that's what's happened. We're all sitting here saying, okay, the Leafs are soft. All the people who've been saying for weeks, I think this team is too soft, they're suddenly validated. So now we're all sitting there and saying, okay, what's going to be done because of this? I didn't have a big problem with – like the Reeves goal, the first one that made it 3-2, Sandin, he lost a battle. I thought he was game to try to battle him. He lost the battle. I asked Galli about it. He said he got the stick once. He had to stay on it. He didn't. They got beat. But the one that concerned me was the 5-3 goal, the Kreider goal, because he just runs over Liljegren, who doesn't get back into the play, and all of a sudden the game's over. And, you know, I think also, too, the Fox goal, that wasn't the defense's fault, but, you know, I think it was Tavares lost them and Fox took advantage. The turnovers that led to some of those goals, there were a lot of things about that game that you didn't like. And I think, Jeff, the question becomes, what do you do about it? And the number one thing I thought about after when Keith said that was, what's Muzzin's health? Like, is there any sense that he's worried that Muzzin is a long-term thing? And, you know, anytime a player is coming back from a concussion, you know, everybody's different. You always wonder. It sounds to me that they're optimistic that it's not going to be a long-term thing. But that was the first kind of thing I wondered about last night. Is he looking at life without Muzzin and his physicality and saying, uh-oh, we could have a problem here?
Well, if it's life without Muzzin for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and do you not think that it's incumbent upon Kyle Dubas to go out and find another defenseman and find someone with a similar skill set to Jake Muzzin? You know, as we've talked about before on this show, on the podcast, elsewhere, Elliot, you know, he does something that's unique from everybody else on that blue line, right? He has the most bite of any player on that back end. He is a very physical defenseman back there. The Maple Leafs don't have anyone like him. And if you look at playoff history as well, like, he's been injured. Like, that's the thing that has happened with Jake Muzzin. It's one of the things people point to when you look at the playoff failures. Like, I'm with you on a couple of things. One, you wonder about Muzzin. Then you wonder about the comments. And then you wonder, okay, it's one thing for us to listen to Sheldon Keefe and muse about it. It's another for Kyle Dubas to hear it. Now, I don't think that Dubas is a reactionary general manager. I don't think that he looks at that and hears the coach's comments and turns around and all of a sudden goes out there and says, okay, we've got to go someone that we got to get out there right now in the market and find someone with snarl. But I just wonder, you know, what goes through, and not just Dubas, but throw it up to Shanahan. It's like, what goes through the organization's mind, or any organization's mind, when the coach says our team played soft? And this is coming off a game against St. Louis where you could make the case they were lucky to win.
Well, you know, I think a couple things. First of all, like I said, I think there's hope that the Muzzin is not a long-term thing, but again, with concussions, you're not sure. But if you do lose Muzzin for a long time, it's a franchise-altering injury, right? Like, you have to replace that. So, yes, I agree with your theory there. I remember early in my time at Hockey Night, I think I called a player soft on the air, or said that something was soft on the air. And Glenn Healy, who was always great about this stuff, he pulled me aside and he said, you know, you just have to be careful with that. And I said, okay, what's the issue? And he goes, there is not a worse thing you can call a player than soft. He said, you know, you can, in typical Healy stuff, like, he named off a whole bunch of things that you could call him that I can't say on the air to stay employed. And he says, I would rather you call me all of those things than soft. Okay. And so I, you know, I understand that. I think when Keefe goes where he went last night, and, you know, he's just as frustrated after the game as the players are. When he goes where he does last night, that is, like, that's as bad as it gets. Like, if you're a player, you're sitting there and you're saying, that's as bad as it gets. And I'm sure Keefe knows where they're going on Saturday night. Their next game is the Island. Yep. It's a team that their whole identity is playing that way, right? And you know the building's going to be nuts because even though Tavares has played before, the fans are still going to be riled up to play them. So, I think he knows what he did. He certainly knows what he did. And, you know, I just think this. I agree with you about Dubas. I don't think he will overreact. But I think, like, a big question they're going to have to ask here is, you know, A, as we talked about Muzzin's health, but B, like, do you look at that as a one-off? Or do you look at that as this is something we can – our players will grow to handle this better over the next 40 games? Or do you look at this as this is emblematic of who we are and we have to address it? And that's a question only the GM can answer.
You know, the other thing that if the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think you're wondering about now, much like if you're the Edmonton Oilers, you're looking at, you know, February 7th to 22nd. And with the NHL schedule and the makeup games coming out yesterday, you know, rescheduling 98 games, 95 of them in the Olympic window, you're looking at this and saying, are we going to need more bodies for February? Like, the Oilers are playing, you know, a five-game week. The Maple Leafs have a 9-game and 19 stretch. Like, are they looking at this and saying, Muzzin or not, we just flat out need more bodies here?
Well, you think you're getting through COVID, right? And and they've had their outbreak, so they're probably good for February. Also, Jeff, the taxi squads are likely going away.
Yes,
you know they're in for the All-Star break and till the All-Star break, and then like it could always change. But I'm under the impression that the expectation is they're going away. You know, the Leafs don't have a lot of cap room, although I think they would be interested in clearing some if they could. They don't have a lot of cap room. And, you know, I don't know how many moves you can make unless you can clear space closer to the deadline.
You know, I know the people when we did the podcast in the summer got pretty annoyed at us for turning the podcast essentially into the Jack Eichel update. What's happening with Jack Eichel?
We've had different phases this year. We've had, you guys going to do 40 minutes on Vancouver every podcast? we've had people saying, can you please talk about Edmonton again? I don't think it's enough. So there's been a few of those this year.
Okay, so let's turn this now that Montreal is settled. And I do want to ask you about Ken Hughes yesterday, but anything new with Vancouver, as I think we all suspect, we're inching towards a conclusion here.
I believe there are interviews going on today and tomorrow. And so I think that Vancouver is getting through its secondary process the end of the week. You know, one other name I kind of heard, and I don't think he's a finalist, but I think he was somebody they at least talked to gauge his interest, was one of our broadcasting friends, Anson Carter. I don't think that I just heard the timing wasn't right, but I've heard that Carter and Rutherford have a lot of respect for each other. And there was a conversation about it, but it just, you know, the timing I heard wasn't right for everyone involved. I think the final interviews are coming down today and tomorrow. So we'll see where we go here.
Okay. Kent Hughes yesterday officially announced and introduced to media yesterday in Montreal. Jeff Gorton and Jeffrey Molson there as well. What did you think of what you heard from Hughes yesterday?
Well, you know, I think the thing is that, you know, it's fun. I had a long conversation with a friend of mine who's from Montreal, and you know, he didn't like something I wrote, and he said, I thought in your blog yesterday you were dismissive of the whole language thing, and I said, isn't it about winning and building the best team so that everybody, whether you're French or English, can enjoy the success of the Montreal Canadiens? And he said, you don't understand. He said, people who are not from there don't understand. And he basically said there's two Quebecs. There's the Montreal, Quebec, where there's a lot of English spoken, and there's the rest of Quebec where there's not a lot of English spoken, and that's important. And he said that you don't get it. And I said, fine, okay, that's fine. So, like yesterday, everyone was waiting to hear Kent Hughes' first five sentences. And I actually thought he looked a little bit nervous. I thought he did a great job. I asked my buddy. He said, yes, he thought he did a great job. But, like I'm trying to imagine the pressure of how you, like, the first 30 words that you speak, you're about to be judged on. Like, I know you use the phrase winning the press conference a lot. I generally think that that's a stupid way about judging someone. But I understand that it happens. And I'm sure that there were people there yesterday, like, rooting for him to butcher it so that they could just clobber the Canadians. And right. I'm happy for him. He did well. Now we'll see what – now the real big stuff starts. Like, where do they go from here? And those are the big questions.
So I put out a another edition of Rink Fries at Sportsnet.ca.
I saw
it. One of the things that I wondered about was, will Ben Chiarot be the first move? will Ben Chiarot be the first move for Kent Hughes here?
I think that it's likely that that is the first move. I think it's well known there that the Canadians will not be extending them, and they're going to look. And I think there's been interest. Florida's been mentioned. I've mentioned St. Louis. I think at times Edmonton's had interest, although I don't know if it makes sense for them now. But I think there's going to be more and more. Like, there's going to be lots of interest in him as a player, and deservedly so. So I just think it's a question of, like, all of a sudden, Jeff, there's a lot of defensemen out there. And they all shoot the right way. But, you know, there's Klingberg, there's Sherratt, there's Chychrun. Ristolainen, I'm hearing, it's not guaranteed he resigns in Philly. So he's going to be out there. Like, there's going to be a lot of – I think there's going to be a lot of conversation about defensemen. But I definitely think that Sherratt's in that mix, and there's a lot of interest in him.
All right, we'll conclude on this one here for each. Nine games around the NHL this evening. You can watch the Oilers and the Panthers on Sportsnet tonight at 9 o'clock. This is a huge couple of games for Edmonton. We all know about the scouting meetings in California and, you know, the mandate from up on high, get a goaltender. The Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers tonight, and then the Oilers facing off against the Calgary Flames on Saturday on Hockey Night in Canada. Let's talk about the Panthers game tonight. There's been a lot of ink spilled about the Oilers, whether it's with Leon Draisaitl and Jim Matheson, whether it's the goaltending situation, whether it's the offseason moves by Ken Holland. Every day is a different audit on this team and speculation on the future, immediate and long-term, of this team. I know that Calgary is a huge game on Saturday, but how big is this one tonight?
It's massive. It's like all games are big games now. And like the late great John Madden, he always had a line that I really liked. And that was, I don't like to say it's a must win game, because if you lose it, what do you do next week? Like that. And I like that thinking. Excuse me. I just hit puberty. But you know, I always like that way of thinking. And so I don't like to call it a must win, because you got other games, but it's a huge game for them. And I think, you know, Jeff, like, until it's like we talked about on the podcast this week, we've got a big battle over the way they play and what they have to change. If you're miserable, and, you know, obviously they're miserable, the best way you can change it is by playing better. And, you know, until they go out and they get a goalie or they add something or whatever they do, all they can do is just work on correcting the mistakes that they make. That game against Ottawa on Saturday night, a lot of the damage was self-inflicted. And that's what you have to do. You can say, look, if we lose to Florida, it's going to be because they beat us, not because we beat ourselves.
So you think the Oilers come out tonight playing more button down than we've seen before, certainly than Saturday?
Do we have enough time left in this segment to get into this again?
I don't want to argue about it. I'm just curious to see
I think
if you
have
go
to.
That route.
You have to. You have
Tonight's to. It'll be a fascinating one. I am curious to see how they play this evening and what the outcome is. Now, Panthers are stinging after losing to the Calgary Flames two nights ago, too. So they're not exactly in a peachy mood. It's an interesting one. Should be a good one. Florida Panthers, Edmonton Oilers tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet. Okay, Elliot, as you go through puberty, we'll let you enjoy the rest of your afternoon, our 14-year-old friend. You be well.
Just wanted to say there are some people asking about the status of the Heritage Classic, which is March 13th, the day. And basically the answer I was told was, and I got the text while we were doing this, is that they're still not sure yet about what the answer to that is going to be.
Okay. And people are tweeting at me, by the way, for saying 50% capacity on February 2nd. No, it's 21st.
No, 21st.
That was a misspeak by me. There we go. All right. Correcting ourselves live on the fly. Great. there we go. All right. Thanks, Friege. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, buddy. Take care.